Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
As days of Premier League football go for Norwich City, that was pretty miserable all round. Welcome to this week's Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. We are back in the office a couple of hours after the full-time whistle to dissect not just on the game. We're also going to do a segment on that Stuart Webber interview. I'm sure the one that you'll know what I'm talking about, and also that Stuart Webber video. So plenty of Stuart Webber themed discussion to come in the second half of the show. My name's Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Dowett and Adam Harvey. The show is brought to you, of course, as ever, in association with Future Radio as well. Paddy, how to sum that up other than a sigh, really? It was a miserable afternoon. It was a difficult afternoon. Carrow Road by the final whistle was near empty. Even the boos were half-hearted. It was a pretty desperate afternoon, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, there's no two ways about it. You know, it's funny, it's actually just this very second you saying that, it's popped into my head again, and the parallel is the scoreline. But cast your minds back, chaps, to the Alex Neil season. Roughly this, probably there's a few more games left in that season. I think it was 15-16 off the top of my head. And the Sunderland game. And it was the same result, wasn't it? 3-0 to Sunderland that day. But as it was another team from the North East. But just that sense of utter deflation and, you know, something seriously wrong in terms of the, what, as Dean Smith alluded to after the game, the culture, you know, within that group, the lack of fight, the lack of spirit. You said on the walk back from the ground, we're here at Arch and HQ, you know, that was probably the first or the closest they've come to maybe raising that mythical white flag that Dean Smith has spoken about before. And Daniel Farkin, to be fair, used to use that terminology as well. And yeah, when the game, as we'll get into, sort of got to sort of 1-0, 2-0 and then 3-0 short after the half time, it was, yeah, it was a very... it was a very uncomfortable place to be, and if it had got even worse, then those remaining people in the stadium, I'm sure, would have expressed their views, and as you said rightly, we'll get into an altercation, a verbal altercation with the sporting director after the game. So, you know, that in itself, I know it's not on the same scale, but evokes really desperate memories of regimes past and Norwich fans being very unhappy with what they're seeing. And yeah, it's a club that feels like there's a bit of an end of an era to it. And you know, in the short term, it means it's nailed on now relegation to the from the Premier League, as it was prior to today. Really, that hasn't materially changed. But it's, how do they turn this around now? Because it feels like a massive reset is required, both within the footballing side and Dean Smith and Craig Shakespeare and that group of players and how they refresh that, but also increasingly now off it in terms of the leadership and the direction from the sporting director. And, you know, summer might not be long enough to sort of unpick all of that. So today was probably just a culmination of, you know, a period of time where they're on a downward cycle now as a football club, and can they pull it back round in the time they need to be ready to go next season. But, you know, 2 hours or so after the final whistle, it feels like a pretty depressing place to be anywhere around Norwich City at the minute.
Yeah, it does. And I guess the aim now, as you say, is to make sure that those wounds aren't too deep and they aren't beyond repair. And that is going to be the challenge and probably going to shape a lot of the discussion in the second half of the pod. I mean, Adam, we were sat at Carrow Road a couple of weeks ago after Burnley. Ironically, we chose the game that they won not to do a podcast, which might be a mistake if that's the last one that they managed to do this season. But I mean, we were at Old Trafford last week, and I think you could kind of strip the individual mistakes out of it and say that was a very promising Norwich City performance, as it was against Burnley. And for the opening 25, maybe even 30 minutes of this game, it felt like Norwich were on top and there was an intensity to their play, and this was a group of players determined to show that they were keen to go out on a high, I suppose, if there is such a way to do that in relegation. But there was all the elements there that maybe we'd seen from Old Trafford, the positive things. But as soon as they went a goal down, it unravelled pretty quickly from a stage where from 35 minutes it was 0-0 and Norwich were well in the game to 51 minutes, then being 3-0 down.
I think that's probably where fans' frustrations are. I mean, you look back at that Burnley game, and as you say, even last week, there was sort of elements of Norwich's game where they were showing that fight and that spirit, when even if we are going to go down, and that obviously was still the case at Old Trafford and the Burnley game, that fight, and, you know, fans can get behind that because at least they've got something to cling on to, that little bit of hope maybe for next season that Dean Smith is starting to put a stamp on this squad, and there's, you know, sort of that elements of positives that you can probably take. And as you allude to it, if there's a way to go down and in these last sort of 5-6 games, you just want to see Norwich fight, battle and give it all their go. And, you know, Newcastle are, you know, obviously everyone knows they're backed by the Saudi Arabian, you know, entity, and they've got all this money and they've spent big in January, and everyone probably expects Newcastle to win that game today anyway, just, you know, the fact they're on good run of form and they're, you know, a very good outfit. But Norwich battled for the first 30 minutes, and I think, yeah, there was, you know, a lot of positives in the game, and the fans actually did get behind that. I thought there was a little bit more atmosphere in the stadium today in sort of that first 30 minutes, and then as soon as the first goal goes in, you just kind of feel like Norwich roll over, and the midfield were just getting overran, and you just, obviously mistakes last week, obviously we saw with Ben Gibson obviously getting dropped today, but yet again mistakes in the game, and at Premier League level you just can't do that. I mean, that's just so basic. I think even when you're at school you're taught not to sort of make those kind of silly errors, and Norwich are doing that far too frequently, and you know, that's what they've done again today, and it's why they've been beaten comfortably, and a lot of the sort of frustrations and the anger of the fans after the game is rightfully there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to an extent, people make mistakes. Human beings make mistakes. I make mistakes in this job. Other people listening will make mistakes in their job. But the regularity that they've arrived this season, and I suppose it's the element that we're seeing mistakes that wouldn't just get punished at Premier League level, Paddy. They'd also get punished at Championship level, or they'd get punished if you were playing at a park on a Sunday morning. We're seeing really bad errors, aren't we? And I think that is maybe rubbing salt into the wound, along with all of those elements that Adam mentioned in terms of maybe players waving the white flag a little bit when the second and third goals went in.
And also, like Adam points out, Ben Gibson last week, Manchester United today, Tim Krul, two very experienced, your leader sort of ship group ultimately, and they're making mistakes and basic mistakes. You know, today's goal, you've either seen it already or by the time you've listened to this, you'll have caught up with the highlights if you wasn't at Carr Road, and just a simple pass, edge of his box. And again, you know, if that was Norwich's under-18s playing on Saturday morning at Golney, I'm sure that the coaches would be seriously picking them up on it. So for it to happen at the highest level by experienced senior players. And Dean Smith, again, I keep referencing what was a very illuminating post-match press conference from him, really. He said he's been in charge for 21 games or so now, and those errors have been pretty much consistent. That's one of the few things Norwich have been consistent at, is making them top of Ricks. And if that is the case, then, as he said, it's a culture that needs to change. And within that, you probably need to change the personnel, because how many chances can he give these players? You know, this season is gone, sadly. But even before today, it was about what next, what comes over the hill. And I don't think there's players who are on this journey, who have been on this journey, who can remain on this journey. So, you know, that's for another day, obviously. But yeah, fundamentally, I mean, it was interesting. I'll go back to that third goal because, again, it's just popped into my head. I looked, I don't know why, but my eye was drawn to the technical area. And when that ball hit the back of the net from Guimaraes, just dinking it over Tim Krul after him and Kenny McLean have combined to really gift the third goal for Newcastle, the match-sealing goal, Dean Smith, as this look of anguish is how I'd describe it, he's put his hands to the back of his head, almost like, what have I just seen? You know, what have I just seen from a team who are going out there now? And as I put in my pointers, this is his team now. I know it's not the personnel that he would have maybe gone out and brought in. He inherited them, obviously. But fundamentally, after 20-odd games, that is his team now on the park. And they're not really representing him in a very positive light at the minute. And he must feel that embarrassment, ultimately, that Newcastle, I think that was their 10th unbelievably, but that was their 10th win, I think, since the turn of the year in the Premier League. You know, credit, irrespective of the money that's been pumped in. And Guimaraes, obviously £35 million reportedly from Lyon in that January window. But they won't have had an easier 3 points than the ones that were gifted to them at Carrow Road. And sadly, we've said that too often. And when it is your senior players, Dean's, is it any wonder he's putting his hands to his head? Because you're relying on, particularly when you're down the bottom and you're scrapping and fighting and trying to get anything of a positive nature, I'm sure he would rely on a Krull, a Hanley, a Gibson. And sadly, too many of those are letting him down and letting themselves down. And yeah, as I say, today feels like a new low, and hopefully it is marks a watershed. You know, Dean Smith went into the game talking about we're scenario planning for plan A, plan B, plan whatever. Well, I think they need to now pull together the plan for we're going to get relegated. What does the Championship look like in terms of moving forward? Because, you know, for me, it's where the fan base are now, because there's a lot of talk about being feeling disconnected and they, you know, they can't relate to what they're seeing. And, you know, that's a dangerous place to be. If you've lost large clumps of your fan base, very hard to bring them back on side as quickly as Norwich need to do it.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to come back to those words that Dean Smith used, losing culture. I mean, some of these players would have been involved 2 years ago, Adam. I mean, there's probably a wider discussion that we can have about Norwich City's existence in the Premier League. I cast my mind back to Jamal Lewis, of all people, who obviously wasn't involved for Newcastle today, but is a Newcastle player. His quotes right at the start of the season, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was along the lines of, if you lose at Newcastle, it's a big deal, there's an inquest. If it happens at Norwich, it's kind of, OK, move on then. So do you think there's a mentality shift that needs to happen, not just from this group of players, but from the club generally about its existence in the Premier League? Because it feels like it gives off the air, and maybe fans will agree with this, of just being grateful to be there. And if you're going to stay in the Premier League, it needs to be more than that, doesn't it?
I go back to those quotes of Stuart Webb when he first arrived. Obviously, he wants to be a top 26 club, and that's still talked about these days. Obviously, that has shifted to a top 17 club, but effectively, Norwich have never proved themselves to be a top 17 club other than those few sort of years under Lambert and then Houghton. And I just think it is. I mean, he said it obviously in his post-match press conference today. It's just far too easy. I mean, Norwich, anyone who rocks up to Carrow Road in the Premier League probably expects to come away with 3 points. And yeah, I think obviously that does bring in the debate of ownership and are Norwich financially capable of competing at Premier League level. But I think there's still a way, you know, just fighting on the pitch, and there's got to be sort of, you know, recruitment's got to be improved. That's obviously, there's always been a flaw in Norwich's Premier League seasons. I just don't think they've ever really got recruitment right other than that first season under Lambert. So I think there is a lot of issues, but yeah, within the club, it's almost as if there's not this belief that they can stay in the Premier League and they can be a Premier League outfit. But there's other clubs in the past that have proved they can do that. I mean, teams like Bournemouth, Norwich are, in my eyes, a lot bigger club than Bournemouth, yet Bournemouth spent, what, 6-7 seasons there, so why can't Norwich do that? And obviously there is the element of money, but I just think, yeah, it is probably deeper within the club that there's just not a belief that they can actually stay there.
Do you agree with that, Pad? I mean, I'm just trying to sink in that. I mean, Smith saying that his group have a losing culture, he leads that group. I mean, that's pretty damning, isn't it, on his group of players? But in the club more widely, do you get this sense of acceptance of Norwich going down? I mean, we'll come back to this Stuart Webber interview in a little while, but there's some quotes in there that maybe fans feel hint towards that on a wider scale. Mm-hmm. Do you get that impression that there is an air of acceptance of Norwich City's place, I suppose, in the football pyramid?
Yeah, I think that is there. I mean, it's okay shifting the metrics of we want to be top whatever, but ultimately,
have to believe it, don't you?
You have to live it. You have to feel that is the case. You know, it isn't about, I mean, as Stuart Webber said when he walked in the door, it was like slogans all over the place about, I don't know, I'm paraphrasing now, like a
best in class,
or whatever. And he just more or less said that was laughable. How can you be best in class? You've got porter cabins dotted around your training ground. You've got this, that, the other. And again, these slogans about we want to be top whatever, that's fine. But that actually has to be not just a mantra or something on a wall. That has to be something they live, all departments, football and non-football side. And I just think 2 seasons ago, that was such an unexpected elevation under Farke. Nobody at the start of that 18-19 season realistically felt Norwich would be in the Premier League. And, you know, because there's still quite a few elements from that era, obviously Farke no longer, but terms of in the playing staff and around the club are still on the same ride. And, you know, is there somewhere buried in the subconscious that they still feel, you know, we're probably not worthy of being in the Premier League and, you know, we'll give it a go. But if it doesn't come off, well, you know, what do you expect? It's almost like you can use the self-funded model and the limitations in terms of the financial power that they've got relative to the rest of the teams in this league is almost really a bit of an excuse, and it shouldn't be. You know, okay, you can take Newcastle out of the equation in terms of a comparative, but Brentford, you know, Brentford have spent money, but by no manner of means did they really outstrip Norwich in terms of what they spent in the summer window. And you know, they've done it in a very astute way and are going to comfortably finish in the Premier League this season. It can be done. Sheffield United, who came up with Norwich two seasons ago. Yes, I know they went back down and landed with quite a heavy bump, but under Wilder, that was the same group of players pretty much, wasn't it, that he had. Where they went wrong thereafter in season two was they tried to go out and spend a few quid, the likes of Sanderberg and what have you. Rian Brewster from Liverpool springs to mind. But again, you might not have liked how they went about it in terms of the style of football, but they were able, with pretty much the same group of players who came out of the Championship, to stay in the Premier League. Why are Norwich palpably now, two seasons running at Premier League level, so far off it, so uncompetitive? There has to be something inherently wrong with that word we keep talking about, culture. And that isn't just about a losing culture in terms of players. That's also the culture around the place. You know, do they honestly, as Dean Smith more or less accused them of post-match, do they believe they belong in the Premier League? Because they're not showing that they feel they belong, whether on or off the park. And, you know, that, I'm afraid, will continue to dog them until and if they get into the Premier League and can stay beyond, you know, a 12-month stay.
Yeah, and I think the most damning thing, I mean, we've already said it, I think in all but maths, Norwich City are relegated, aren't they? And that's reflected. But people will look at the teams in and around them at the moment, Watford, Burnley, Everton. These are teams that haven't been great this season. And Norwich City have been not just worse, but in terms of the numbers, significantly worse. Whether it's maybe they're close on points to Watford, but they've scored 9 goals fewer than Watford. They've conceded the most goals in the division. I mean, Dean Smith, this going back to this phrase, losing culture, Dean Smith's post-match interview, I mean, you almost wonder if you caught him in a very quiet moment what he'd have to say about taking this job in the first place. But, you know, publicly, and that's all we can base it on, he's always been very enthusiastic, I think, about the job in the long term. The fact that there is probably a little bit of a project here, and he sees that. But do you think, given what he said in his post-match tonight, Adam, that he is reaching conclusions about which players he wants next season and beyond? Do you think he's getting to that stage now where he's kind of putting ticks and crosses next to those who he feels can be a part of what's next?
Yeah, I was interested. He still sort of stated how the loan players are Norwich City players, and you know, they were brought in this season to play for Norwich, and therefore they still are a Norwich player till the end of the season. But you got to feel like today the substitutions he's made, I mean, obviously John Rowe's been coming on quite frequently now for a couple of months, and I think he probably is the kind of player, same with Jolis, that he needs to be forefront in now for the last 5 games to really get them into this, bed them into the team and maybe give them the kind of instructions that he's going to want from them next season. And again, they're going to have a little bit of freedom because Norwich are probably going to be relegated within the next couple of games. So there's not really going to be anything to play for, not that there is at the moment. But I just think that's probably, it is probably going to start planning for it. Obviously, we know the meetings have been going on in the background in terms of planning, and I think realistically they wouldn't be planning for a Premier League season. They'd know full well where they're going to be. And the one bonus is, you know, that Dean Smith knows how to get out of the Championship in the same way that Daniel Farke did. Obviously, he'd done it at Aston Villa, and I think obviously he's going to change the playing style and probably build them so when they hopefully do come back up, they're going to be a little bit more prepared to play the football that maybe is a little bit more defensive-minded, but just being a little bit more resolute and trying to sort of, yeah, just build a style that's more capable of playing in the Premier League, which I think we have seen glimpses of, you know, over the course of Dean Smith's reign. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer, and Norwich have really got to get it recruitment-wise right and give Dean Smith a little bit more power, I think, just to kind of get the players that he wants and mould the team that he wants to hopefully bring back to the Premier League for the season after.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to the pod we did after Brighton, Pad, and you know, we were fairly critical, I think, of maybe not of Dean Smith as a coach or anything like that, but certainly about what Norwich City were on the pitch and what they looked like on the pitch at that stage. But actually, you put it in the context of the last two games against Manchester United, where you see Ben Gibson hesitate, give the ball away to Anthony Elanga, who then squares for Cristiano Ronaldo. You see today Tim Krul, who I think, in fairness, Guimaraes is blocked by I think one of the defenders. But even so, it's a nightmare pass. It's a horrible mistake. You could look at the one for the first goal as well, which is just a catalogue of errors. Really, no amount of coaching from anyone can account for individual errors. And this is kind of where maybe you come back round to feeling a little bit, well, feeling sympathy for Dean Smith, because ultimately he's trying to get a tune out of a group of players that have proven in 33 games this season that they're not good enough for this level.
And that's what it boils down to. You know, it's the cliche, but the table doesn't and will not lie, and it doesn't lie at the minute as we look at it now in front of us. You know, 33 games, they've won 5, 22 goals scored. I mean, that to me is pitiful. And that's with a guy who's in double figures.
And they've scored as many goals as games lost this season.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just want to narrow it down today. I mean, Mila Rashica, what have we seen from him? He was completely anonymous. And you know, he's coming to Norwich having been part of a relegation in the Bundesliga with Werder Bremen. And, you know, for all his promise, what have we seen tangible in terms of productivity? Yes, he's weighed in with a few assists, but he's got one goal scored at Liverpool. Not good enough, nowhere near good enough. You know, I thought Matthias Norman today for 20, 25 minutes was as good as there was in Norwich colours. You know, he was on the ball, he was making things happen, played a lovely ball through to Kieran Dowell, who should at least get that on target. He then kind of took a blow on the top of his right foot just in front of the dugouts and took 5 minutes or so to get back on the pitch, and then we never saw him again. He just faded into the mists of time, you know, and that isn't good. That isn't good enough. You know, you talked about the first and the third goal. The second goal for me was more telling because Newcastle just popped around. It was like a training ground drill and Norwich were mannequins. You know, the amount of compliance and lack of willingness to press. You know, Newcastle popped off about, I don't know, 4 or 5 passes just at either side of the halfway line, and then a ball threaded through, and it was almost Jacob Murphy was fighting his own man to get on the ball. You know, like the sea parted. And yes, there was a very fortuitous sort of way the ball squirmed to Joe Linton from Grant Hanley's sort of last-ditch block, but the damage was in prior to. And if you're not showing the desire and the appetite to go and press when you're 1-0 down at that stage, you know, I don't think it's a quality issue with some of these players, because there is quality amongst them, but the mentality is wrong. The unwillingness to roll your sleeves up. I mean, they come back from 2 goals the previous weekend against Manchester United, but they're quite clearly a similar squad in terms of their brittleness, in terms of the desire or lack of. So I wouldn't read too much into a comeback against that team, but there was no prospect of that happening against a Newcastle squad with their tails up. And there hasn't been for the majority of these games. You know, when they've fallen behind, they've really not looked capable of, A, mustering enough quality, even though there is quality there in this group, but more tellingly, more worryingly, and more accusatory maybe, the fight, the character, the spirit, the will to resist, to face adversity and come through it. You know, that isn't there in enough quantities, and that's quite an indictment on this group of players. And you're right, Dean Smith, what can he do if that toxicity is there in this group? Ultimately, you know, he can tweak things on the training ground and has done it seemingly. And as I say, the first 3 games and then the first 25 minutes today, you know, the shape was robust enough to create chances to cause problems. So, and the players within the shape, you know, there was again, you know, ample threat, but then it subsided so quickly that, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter what you do in terms of shape and personnel if people aren't willing to close players down and you know, actually want to fight for a cause, then it's irrelevant how good a coach Dean Smith is. And I think that's why maybe today, for the first time publicly, we've seen that him openly admit that we're going to have to change some of these players. And obviously there'll be a natural sort of turnover, and those loan players will go back, and there'll be others move on. But but it feels like it needs a turnover because, you know, if you've got those negative elements in this group of players, then, you know, when the adversity comes in the Championship, will they fold again rather than fight? And, you know, it's sad to see because for some of these players, it probably is the end of the line and they've been good servants to Norwich. But ultimately, time moves on and their time is done, I'm afraid, for some of these players. And you just hope that Dean Smith gets the backing and then they're able to do what they need to do because it feels like an injection is badly needed.
Yeah, do you know what summed it up for me? It was that period in the second half where Newcastle were just knocking the ball around, yeah. No pressure. Their fans are olaying in the away end.
And that was 55 minutes in, Connor. I know that because I put that in my pointers. 55 minutes into a game, you're an away fan, you're at an away ground, you're 3-0 up and you're able to get away with that. I mean, what does that say?
But the more concerning element is there's not an attempt from anyone in yellow and green to break it up, to commit a foul, to press.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an acceptance, isn't there? Yeah. It's an acceptance of the situation. Yeah, a resignation to what the situation was. I mean, Adam, to throw that over to you, I mean, and Dean Smith referenced it as well. And I always think it's quite lazy when you hear people, they're at the bottom of the table, they're losing games, they didn't get a single yellow card, but it does lean into kind of what we're discussing here about this resignation that happened. And as Paddy mentioned, it wasn't 85 minutes in, it wasn't 90 minutes in, it was 55 minutes in. It was after the second goal, really. I think Tim Krul said a couple of weeks ago, might have even been after the Brighton game, if this Norwich City team concede a goal, that does seem to be game over.
It's just, to me, there's no real characters amongst this group. There's no one you kind of look to and think, yeah, he's going to really galvanise us and make us turn this game around. I mean, you know, you've maybe got a Tim Krul or a Grant Hanley, but I don't even think they're being as boisterous on the pitch at the moment and really making a point. And it just feels like it was just like today. And as soon as they go 1-0 down, they just roll over and it's a bit like, yeah, go on, have a few more goals and let your away fans and the opposition team enjoy their day out of Carr Road. And it is really hard and disappointing from a fan's perspective that you are a Norwich fan, you go to Carr Road and you just go in there almost accepting that Norwich are going to do that. And I just think, yeah, it all boils back down to the culture of just accepting that Norwich aren't able to compete at this level. And yeah, it's just disappointing. I think that's all I can really say about it. It's just such an acceptance that we aren't capable of competing. And I don't really see that changing until something deeper within the club, whether that be a complete changeover of players and maybe some like Dean Smith bringing them back up and hopefully making them a stronger outfit to compete. Yeah, it just feels at the moment that there's such a sort of loss of connection between fans and the players on the pitch and the players aren't capable of getting each other up, let alone the fans. And that, yeah, it just feels like there just needs to be a bit of a change.
I think the frustration from my perspective is you, at the start of the season, you heard everyone talk about Norwich City and it was quite lazy assumptions, a lot of them. But the general point was that, it's Norwich. They'll go straight back down. They won't even make a ripple. It'll be what it usually is. It'll be a relegation where, as we say, the white flags are waved and nobody barely notices. And I think from Norwich fans' perspective, from our perspective, you're trying to kind of change that narrative and explain why that's not going to be the case this time. And actually, they've just fallen into all of those assumptions, haven't they? They've made it the point where Norwich fans now can't feel like they can defend them. And that's quite a sad position to be in. And, you know, throughout this season, I've often joked that it's a shame they haven't had to play this Norwich team twice. But who knows? It's a disappointing afternoon of football.
We live Norwich City. The build-up.
The passion.
The drama. The last-minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pinkham Plus. Pinkham Plus. The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pinkham Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
Which probably lends us nicely onto the elements that happened around the day and probably the day of the sporting director. I'd like to say he's had quieter, probably better days from his perspective. I mean, if we start with that interview, Paddy, I mean, it's an interview that came out in the Times, I think it was last night, but most people would have seen it this morning. And we're going to dissect some of the quotes within there in a little bit more detail in a moment. But I think it's important for us to preface this by saying we have asked to speak to Stuart Webber. We were told that he wouldn't be doing anything until relegation was confirmed. So I think this has caught us by a little bit of surprise as well. Although, of course, he has been launching his charity this week, which is probably a lot of why that Times interview happened. Paddy, I mean, this has clearly rubbed Norwich fans up the wrong way. I mean, I'm going to pick some lines in it and we'll put them into context in a little bit more detail. My life isn't to appease Norwich fans. He also went on to say that if 90% of me isn't enough, it's fine because I'm ready to walk out the door. I'm ready for the next stage of my life. There was the quote as well about not getting angry or upset about relegation. Again, we'll put those in context in a moment, but this isn't what Norwich fans want to hear from the person leading their club. When we talk about culture, we talk about a losing culture, and we maybe talk about this football club as in general in the Premier League. I mean, if this was a player saying this, it would be pretty damning. The fact it's a sporting director makes it maybe slightly more damning.
Well, he is the figurehead, and very definitely the figurehead, if you observe in from close quarters, and to be emitting that kind of shrugging the shoulders almost feeling around it when they are where they are, which is not what anybody connected with Norwich would have hoped for this season. It does feed into that feeling of happy to just sort of bob along, really. And that's probably as far removed from where Stuart Webber is at and has been at since he arrived here, because you do see the drive and the energy that has, you know, look at the transformation around the training ground. We talked about it earlier, you know, it, Porter Cabin Central it was. Now it's a very, very, very elite environment, and the culture there is, you know, progressive. But again, you know, talking of that, they've spent hundreds of thousands on a device called the Soccer Bot, and you know, that might look like technologically leading the way, the only club in England, but now in the context of a losing team, it, you know, it just opens up the criticism and maybe ridicule in some quarters. Certainly if you watch them trying to pass a ball on occasion, yeah, you'd wonder if they've ever actually opened the doors and gone in there. But my take on it all, well, ultimately, since he walked through the door in 2017, he has, in his view, always delivered the unvarnished truth and brutal honesty, and brutal being the operative word, and people have taken it at face value and on occasion, more than on occasion, probably had their backs put up. So this interview isn't a departure from how he conducts every other interview. It is the same unvarnished, this is me, take it or leave it, this is what you get attitude. So I'm not surprised that the tone of it, the voice of it, I think the timing of it is horrendous, you know, to come out as it has done on the eve of this game when they still materially had an opportunity to, you know, fight their corner and take this a bit longer anyway, at least, or prolong it at least. Because anybody who cared to sort of venture onto social media in the hours leading up to the game, it was universally critical of him and what he was saying, and people obviously dissecting the soundbite elements of it that, you know, probably not so much the context of it, but why create that negativity around the place? And of course, then it, you know, it bleeds into a very, very, very dispiriting performance on the pitch and then events thereafter. So ultimately, the 90% thing, I think that's been taken out of context. I mean, does anybody think that man works 9 to 5 with an hour's lunch break? You know, he is a workaholic by common consent, you know, and as he says, I think, in that article, you know, if I'm doing some physical training for his various climbs at 5:30 in the morning or 10 p.m. at night, then you can rest assured that in the intervening period, his focus is fully on Norwich City. So I don't buy the 90% line. It's... You know, it's an easy one to jump on and hit him round the head with. But I think the biggest issue I have with it, apart from the timing, is that bits and pieces around why he's still here, that ultimately when his contract was running to an end and, you know, he was clearly thinking, I'm going to move on now. That's what he'd said all along. I won't sign another deal. I'm going. That's it. And he stayed. And you know, he's made it quite clear in that article and in a few of the forums that I've heard him speak that ultimately it didn't come down to money. It just came down to him being allowed the opportunity to go and pursue what for him has been a bit of a lifetime ambition to go and do these climbs leading up to an ascent up Everest. But that, unfortunately, perception is everything, particularly in this world of social media. And Lord knows we've seen that today in terms of Stuart Webber and social media and how it can be a feeding frenzy both before and after the game. But it just feeds this perception that, well, is he not really fully plugged into it now? Is he just going through the motions a degree? Is he almost, you know, shrugs his shoulders and it doesn't really bother me, it doesn't really hurt me. I could move on any time. You know, all of that is very toxic. And given he is the figurehead and he's driving this whole club from top to bottom, football side, non-football side, it all flows back to Stuart Webber ultimately, to feel or to have that sense that he's not really the kind of, this is the fully focus of my life, this is what I'm all about now. You know, yes, I have a family, obviously, but I live, breathe, sleep, eat, think about sleep. When I'm thinking, when I'm sleeping, I'm probably still mulling over Norwich City. You know, it conveys the impression that he isn't anymore and that, you know, his attention is elsewhere. And I think that's a very dangerous thing for him to be perceived that it's almost like I'm here, but I'm not really here, you know. And I'm sure he would argue vociferously that, or vehemently, that that isn't the case. But an interview of that nature with those type of sound bites, it does nothing to sort of dispute or dispel the idea that, you know, if he went tomorrow, would he be bothered? And that's a sad way if it is going to unravel in this regard. And he's basically given anybody who was very anti him anyway, you know, mainly maybe over the lack of astuteness around the recruitment last summer going into the Premier League season, it's just cheap and easy material now to you know, basically attack him with on social media. So, you know, for that, he's got no one to blame but himself, really. So, very poorly timed interview. And then, as I say, you know, what he's saying, which for him, I'm sure, was, you ask me a question, I'll give you an honest answer. This is what I feel, this is what I think. And maybe that is refreshing and has been refreshing, but in the context of a team who are failing on the pitch, I don't think it's doing them any favours now.
What's the song? You say it best when you say nothing at all. Is it that? Maybe that's where Norwich City
are. Don't sing it, Connor.
I'm not going to sing it now.
Things are depressing enough.
Everyone will turn off if I start singing it. But, I mean, I'll read you that quote in more detail, the one that we're talking about here. It says, I've been very clear when I signed that earlier contract that I'd leave in June 2022 because I wanted to have some time away. Delia and Michael didn't want me to leave. So I said, listen, there's only one thing which matters to me in this negotiation. It's not about money, titles or kudos. The only thing I want is the chance to go and achieve a dream. And my dream is climbing Mount Everest. Before that, I'm going to need some pockets of time off. And then, of course, he went on to say, if 90% of me isn't enough, it's fine because I'm ready. Already ready to walk out of the door. I'm ready for the next stage of my life. But they wanted me to stay, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. I mean, Adam, I don't necessarily think it's the mountaineering that Norwich City fans are upset about. I think it's, or maybe angry about, annoyed about, whatever. I think it's the fact that, as I said to Paddy beforehand, if a player comes out and says this, whether the 90% thing is in context or whether it isn't, if there's any illusion or any suggestion, context or without context, that they're not giving their all, I mean, that is about as damning as you can be for a footballer. It's about as bad as it can get for a footballer to say that. So the fact that this is the person, as Paddy said, that everything flows into, even if it's not the case, and even if it isn't true that his workload has dropped off, it's that perception that Paddy spoke about, isn't it? That's the issue that Norwich City fans have. It's not the climbing Mount Everest bit of it that people are getting wound up about. It's everything surrounding that, I would say.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, you know, most Norwich fans, I remember, go back to the AGM when he announced that he was going to stay, and I think most fans actually had quite a positive reaction to that and felt that, you know, he's quite a vocal figure. Quite a few times he's upset Norwich fans by things he said, but whatever, you know, whatever he said and done, I think, you know, most Norwich fans could probably agree that he has transformed the club from, you know, a bit of a mess where financially they were pretty unstable. And whether you like the fact that Norwich had just sort of got this mantra of being a stable club, at least, you know, your club's safe in good, in good and safe hands. And he's sort of, I'd say the main reason for that. But yeah, when you get someone who is the main figurehead in the club coming out, and it just sounds like they don't want to be here, or their heart's maybe not in it anymore, and it maybe, I mean, as a fan, you've got to feel that maybe it does need to be somebody new that's got that little bit more energy, more of an appetite, and wants to come in and almost do what Weber's done in get them back to the Premier League. But obviously what Weber hasn't done is recruit for a team that's able to stay in the Premier League, and probably that's where, you know, a lot of fans' frustrations is well, mainly at. I mean, he's come out at the start of the season and said that, you know, he's given them a chance this time with a tank and grenades and everything, and ultimately it's Norwich are in the same boat as where they were 2 years ago with a team that didn't have £70 million of injection. So yeah, I think maybe his time has come to an end and he maybe doesn't want to be here. I think, you know, the problem is if he's back in next season in the Championship and he does get Norwich back up, it does the perception of fans change again if he gets a recruitment right in the Championship? But ultimately, then if they go back up, if he's not feeling that he's capable of building a team that's able to stay in the Premier League, maybe it is better that they change it this summer and get someone in fresh. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer ahead, and I'm not really getting the vibes from Stuart Weber that he wants to be part of it, even if he has agreed on a rolling contract to be part of it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I was sat in the room when I heard Stuart Weber say about Emi Buendia, he didn't want to be here, so we got rid of him. See you later, mate, I think was the exact quote that he said. And like you said, that probably isn't the context of these quotes, and context is important, and it does matter. But I think Norwich fans feel like these are the words of someone who feels that the club owe them something a little bit. The club owe him something. And that's never really a good position to be in. Do you think that assessment of how some fans feel is a fair reflection on the basis of this interview?
Well, I think, fair or not, I think that is the perception now. I keep talking about perception, but there are fans who, prior to this interview, will look at the sort of the climbing element and just think, you know, is he fully committed? Is he fully on board now? You know, he's committed. I'm sure he's committed. I mean, it's still a massive part of what he's all about, but it doesn't define him. I mean, I think there was a quote there about, I don't want to be Stuart introduced at weddings as Stuart. He works for Norwich City. My life has to have more meaning from that. And it's kind of this, and we've had that vibe from him. You know, we've, you know, not interviewed him in terms of the formal sense since Leeds, I think it was. But we've been in and around him on occasion. And I think we've remarked on that he's not the same man who, you know, when he walked through the door first off and he had this drive and this hunger and this energy, you know, to a frightening degree, really. It was all consuming. That's probably the best word I can think of, or the best phrase.
It was a recession, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was just this man is unlike any other you might have encountered in football. That he's just, you know, for his age as well. I mean, he's still young now, relatively, but at that age as well, to be taking all that on his shoulders as he did and drive Norwich forward from a position of incredible weakness sort of financially, you know, the state they were in, the football, the squad, the decaying squad, the decaying facilities, and to bring them to where they are now, you know, if it was to end today, you know, that still would be a testament to his work and his legacy. But, you know, football, as he himself likes to say, it's an infinite game. There's no end point to it. And it's not enough now for Norwich fans maybe to sort of, you know, hail him for what he's done. They want him to continue being that passionate advocate and zealously driving the club forward to reach new standards and set new ground or you know, establish themselves in the Premier League. That's the Holy Grail. And, you know, do you feel he's almost wanting to go all in to try and achieve that? You don't get that sense now. And these are just manifestations of that feeling, you know, in wanting to sort of go in and achieve something else in his life. And even in this, in latest interview, he's talking about, you know, when I do Everest, that which could be sort of 2024, he'll be, I think he says, around the age of 40. And what next? What could fuel him next? Well, maybe a career change. I mean, that's, if you're a Norwich fan, you don't really want to hear that there's, you know, the guy who's supposed to be driving all of this is kind of already sort of, is letting his mind wander to beyond Norwich. You know, you want to hear him talk, basically Norwich is the be-all and end-all, and I want to drive this club on. And I don't think Norwich fans will be necessarily feeling that now from their sporting director. And you know, like Adam's point, it's very difficult now to see how this ends well, because you know, that fracture is there, and if he's of a mind that almost you should be grateful for what I've done now, and I show me some, you know, more respect or whatever, and he feels he isn't going to get that, then, you know, would it be a surprise if he just walks? He's on this rolling deal, so contractually there wouldn't be an issue with that. You know, if he just thinks, right, okay, I'm not appreciated enough now, or people really have short memories, to paraphrase old Paul Lambert, back in the day. And, you know, what more do these people want? Do they not know what the state of this club was that I inherited, and look at it now? And if that's not good enough and I'm not good enough, then fine, tough. I'll go and, you know, see how you get on without me. So I hope it doesn't go down that path, but it is threatening to go down that path. And of course, you know, we'll probably get into this now, you know, the alleged altercation after the game as well. That'll do nothing to repair any bridges that are being burnt.
No, absolutely. I'm using my philosophy A-level here. I think it was Batman, the great philosopher, who said, you either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain. And it does feel a little bit like that. But yeah, I mean, Adam, if we move on to what happened after the game, I think there's, I don't want to, and maybe it falls into the acceptance point that, and maybe this isn't the fault of anyone in particular, and I'm not naming anyone in particular, but it does feel like people inside the club, irrespective of what happens, Norwich come up, they go down, they're financially secure, they'll always fill out Carrow Road, the fans will kind of enjoy the journey, blah, 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 blah. I mean, what we saw after the game, which is, and we must reiterate, a very small section of supporters, but a section of supporters nonetheless, making their feelings known, as they're completely allowed to do. We live in a democracy. Protest is, at the minute, legal. Whether that stays the same or not, we'll see. But they've voiced their opinion. Stuart Webber has obviously come out, and we'll kind of get into the nuts and bolts of why he came out and the reasons or whatever he came out. There are some fans on social media, unconfirmed reports that you know, there was maybe him provoking Norwich fans in certain way, although that's kind of been denied from people that we've spoken to. So, I mean, all of this it feeds into what Pad says there. It feeds into this fractious relationship now between fans and Stuart Webber. And you often see with a manager, when fans turn, it's very, very difficult to get them back again. So I guess the question is, what does he need to do to get them back? Is it possible now to bring fans back on the side where they are going to view him? Is it just about recruiting well and winning games in the Championship and everything will turn?
I think without that video surfacing, there probably was a way back if he'd have stayed and built a team next season that was competing at the top of the Championship and things were looking rosy again, then I think this season almost gets forgotten about and all everything that's gone in the past. But once you see a video like that, and obviously it goes viral, and obviously every Norwich fan up and down the globe and across the world would have probably seen that by now, and it doesn't particularly paint a pretty image for any fan, let alone Norwich fans. And obviously Stuart Webber's got the mantra of ignore the noise, and you've got to say, that has he ignored the noise there? Because he's come out and he's obviously confronted the fans, albeit that we don't know the full context of everything that was being said. But it does feel like that fracture is maybe sort of getting almost extended from that debacle that he's had with fans outside the stadium. I think, you know, it doesn't look good from a club's perspective, and I just don't see a way now that he repairs that. I mean, if you could have maybe got him on the fans maybe got him and there was a, you know, more of a sort of, I suppose, a conversation about their problems and stuff, but I think the fact that it's almost boiled down to a lot of not nice language and a lot of sort of ranting and frustration, and I just don't see that changing at all, and I don't see a way back now for Stuart Webber, certainly not in the short term. And obviously that interview he's coming out as well, I just think that's stirred the pot even more, and obviously fans' frustrations were already probably a point where they were boiling over the top of the boiling point. So the fact that he's come out and done an interview that's obviously, you know, gone into a big national paper, and then also then, you know, at the end of the game confronted some fans, I just think, yeah, it's probably gone beyond the point of repair now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 12-second clip on social media, so we weren't there. We can't fully put that, as you were, used the word earlier in terms of around the interview, we can't fully put it into context or describe for sure what happened. You've only got the hearsay of people who were there at the time and this video. I mean, the video is... It shows Stuart Webber essentially being pushed back inside the director's entrance by his wife and executive director, Zoe Ward. There's fans who are, I think it's fair to say, calling him certain names that you wouldn't want to be called. And there is a human nature to responding to that. And we've spoken to people subsequently who were trying to make the case that he was keen to get away fairly quickly, not because of the game or anything like that, just because... he has other engagements, I think tomorrow, maybe watching a game, something along those lines. So there was, his car was waiting outside and he was ready to get into that. And this is what this whole thing is. This is how it's all come to a head with him trying to get into his car. That's what we've been told. Whether, as we said, we weren't there, so we can't fully confirm nor deny whether that was the full case. Only people who can were the people who were there and Stuart Webber himself. But Paddy, I mean, to round off the whole podcast, really, it just paints a picture of a very toxic football club, doesn't it? And a football club that is at conflict to the people who are supporting it and in the stands, and those people who are running it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, whether it was a small pocket of fans or, you know, a mass demonstration, if you've got elements of your fan base going at it with your sporting director, you know, whatever the provocation or whatever language was being used, and it, like Adam says, it's an absolutely terrible look. And, you know, fundamentally, as we've discussed at length, how do you heal the wounds when it's got to that level, that it's almost like they can't have a... We have to assume they couldn't, you know, just stand there and have a sensible conversation. And he listened to their frustrations, he put his points across, and maybe the fans take it on board. You know, if it's got to almost a shouting match, then ignore the noise. I think they need to start painting over that sign at Colney, because the noise will only grow in intensity now. And, you know, as we were mapping out, I mean, it could be obviously Villa next away, depending on results elsewhere. It could be the West Ham game at Cairo that confirms their relegation, which would be a very... pertinent and painful parallel with what happened two seasons ago when it was a West Ham game that effectively confirmed their relegation. The big difference was, of course, there was no fans in the stadium at that point. That was the Project Restart era. There'll be plenty of fans inside the stadium, and you fear now even more gathering around that main stand director's entrance should that scenario play out. And you know, it's very hard to see how bridges are repaired from this point. And maybe the club will have to think about that moving forward. But fundamentally, if you can't even have a civil conversation that isn't involving swearing and finger pointing and one director having to shove the sporting director back inside, then it's very hard to see how you progress. And I'm sure from the club's point of view, they will hopefully package it, will want to package it as well. It was just frustration boiling over. And that frustration amongst the fan base at what they've not seen on the pitch and what they haven't seen this season. But, you know, you do fear that this is actually a bigger fault line running through the fan base and the football club. And, you know, if it is, and this is just the most visible and graphic representation of it, then it's going to get very bumpy from here, I think.
There's an apathy, isn't there? I sensed it in Carrow Road today, understandably so, from supporters. And that's often what they say is most dangerous in football, don't they? It's not the anger, it's not the frustration, it's when it reaches the apathetic end of the spectrum, when people can shrug their shoulders and kind of wash their hands with it. And we saw how rapidly Carrow Road emptied. Part of me was relatively surprised it didn't empty any sooner than it is. And it feels strange that we're kind of sat here after a 3-0 defeat at home saying... Well, actually, the head coach has probably come out of this better than anyone, given that interview that he gave earlier in the week, which was of a much
different tone. His comments post-match, which I think actually, as you said, maybe got to the heart of some of the issues that fans are feeling. It feels strange to say it, given how much scrutiny is given to football managers these days. But as the, we're sitting in a room that has been swarmed with darkness, much like Norwich City season, so there's a nice parallel there. But we'll leave the podcast there for this week. Gents, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you very much for listening as well. We've got plenty more content if you're one for who enjoys pain. We've got plenty more on the Pink and Plus app this week. You can get a month's free trial, $1.99 thereafter. We feel it's pretty good value for money, so hopefully you agree and you join the little community that's growing on there now. We're pretty proud of it, and there's obviously plenty more to come as we begin to end this horrible chapter of Norwich City in the Premier League. We'll see you soon.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.